WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
At the 30, at the 20, cuts towards the middle, and Nykeem Johnson takes it home for a Syracuse touchdown.
The Orange going quick. Bounce pass, Jimmy Boeheim, baseline drive, and jam!
Going through all the good.
To the midline, it's bobbled, and Syracuse wins!
A winding shot by Trimboli, 10 yards out, shoots, he scores!
And all the bad.
Syracuse, bowl ineligible for the third straight year.
They made it into the NCAA tournament as a number 11 seed, but it is over as Houston moves on to the Elite Eight.
And now, here are your hosts, Johnny Gadamowitz and Ethan Frank.
Happy early Thanksgiving. Welcome on into another edition of the Ostrom Avenue Podcast with Ethan Frank. I'm Johnny Gadamowitz. Busy time on the Hill, Syracuse football, Syracuse hoops. Of course, Jim Boeheim's crew wrapping up the Empire Classic. Two games that needed extra basketball in order to be determined. And the first one, well, that went Syracuse's way. A 74-71 OT win over Richmond in what will likely be remembered as the Joe Girard game. The very next night, though, a 76-69 OT loss to St. John's in a battle for the state of New York supremacy. Ethan, how's it going today, my friend?
It's going good. It's a nice reset week here for all of us in Syracuse. The basketball team doesn't take any breaks. The football team doesn't take any breaks. But we're here to break it all down. And, you know, we were both at the game against St. John's on Tuesday. I was also at the Richmond game on Monday in Brooklyn. I came away just really impressed with the way this team played. I mean, Colgate punked this group, and there's no way around that. And you were there for that game, Johnny, so you could speak on that better than anyone else. But witnessing the way this team played for two nights in Brooklyn was, I think, a pleasant surprise, I think is the best way to put it, because the expectations were so low. Obviously, you have the big blowout win over Northeastern. That's a pretty bad basketball team. No offense to the Huskies. But Richmond's a solid team. Like, the A-10 is a very good basketball league. It's obviously not, you know, the ACC or the Big Ten or the Big 12 or something. But the A-10 is a very solid basketball league. And you're able to build a big lead. You give it up, but you fight. And that was the thing. Joe Girard plays very well. And Judah Mintz, I mean, this man is a star. Like, he is incredible. Jim Boeheim compared him to Johnny Flynn before the season. Like, he's right. Like, he is not wrong. You know, I think the only thing that may be different from Johnny and Judah, I don't know if Judah's slamming that one home against Rutgers, the famous Johnny Flynn dunk. But he is a special, special player and just a joy to watch every time he can.
Couldn't agree more. I think there are things to take away from this Barclays trip that you have to be very impressed with. You know, obviously in a perfect world, you want that win against St. John's last night. To be quite honest, I think St. John's was the better team. And I think they were the team that was more capable of going to an overtime period, making sure you're not winded, you're not tired. It's a St. John's crew that was loaded with juniors and seniors, certainly checked the box as far as the experience factor is concerned. But for Syracuse, not a bad game whatsoever, especially when you consider that, look, Jesse Edwards got in foul trouble early. Even Munir Hema was dealing with some foul trouble issues.
He was terrific,
by the way.
How about
the production you got from Hema? Yeah, he came in. Ethan, I think it's fair to say that there wasn't too much of a drop-off. I mean, obviously, you want number 14.
Offensively, there was a pretty big drop-off.
Offensively, there was a drop-off, yes. But in terms of what he was giving you with clogging the paint down low and making things difficult, even if it wasn't going into the box score necessarily, just a real presence, especially for a St. John's team that doesn't like to shoot the three, that likes to try to get to the rack as much as they can. Hema was up to the challenge, so he's obviously someone that grows in games like this. But yeah, I want to hit on Mintz a little bit more, Ethan, because this is someone who looks like an NBA type player, to be perfectly honest. I think he, you know, he gives you 41 minutes last night. Yeah, he turns the ball over six times, but every time the ball is in his hands, there's an ability for him to put it in the hoop, whether it be pulling up or getting to the rim. And I think ferociousness is really a word that comes to mind when you think about what he can do, not only off the dribble, but as a slasher, as an ability to really take any defender to the hoop. And even if he's not putting it in, you know what? He's absorbing contact, he's getting fouled, and then he's knocking down shots at the free throw line. So I think Syracuse can be really excited about what Mintz is going to give you this year. He appears to be good as advertised, and then some. Let's hit on another freshman, though. How about Chris Bell? You know, he gives you a really strong night against Richmond a couple of nights ago. Last night against St. John's, pours in 12 points, connects on 2 3-pointers. I know Jim Boeheim has gotten after both him.
Is he getting after him?
That's been the biggest talking point for Boeheim in these post-game press conferences, in terms of not getting involved on the glass. You think about Bell in particular, 35 minutes and no rebounds. Ethan, are you at all willing to overlook that because he is starting to come around a bit offensively and emerge as a scoring threat? Or at some point, is Boeheim right? Do these guys need to make it a point to get involved when it comes to the rebounding?
Well, he got bailed out by Benny, Jesse, and Munir. I think that's the best way to put it. Benny, shout out to him, plays all 45 minutes in this game. And I actually asked Boeheim about that post game. I was like, you know, you called out Benny. He only had 3 rebounds against Richmond. He comes out tonight, he has 10. You play him the entire game. Benny did not sit for a single second. That wasn't a timeout. And he said, you know, the only thing about Benny, he was happy with the way he competed. He was happy with the way he rebounded. Just the two things are defensive rotations. There are just a couple times he loses guys in the corner, and St. John's got a couple of threes because of it. And then offensively, he shot the ball very well last night being Tuesday. 5 of 10 from the field, even knocked down a 3. I am not a fan of long twos. I will be the first to say I don't like long twos. Take a step back and take a 3. It's worth a point more. But if he's comfortable and he is going to consistently make them, I'm not going to complain. I would appreciate if they were threes, but confidence is the biggest thing. And I think the same goes for Bell, is that when you're confident, you are much more dangerous to a defense, because then the defense has to worry about you more. So that's a good thing. But Boeheim was saying that, you know, Benny's playing a little bit too much of like a 3 on offense right now, and he needs him to be more of a 4, needs him to be more inside, you know, fighting for offensive rebounds, finishing at the basket. And part of that falls on Mintz for not, you know, I think the two biggest weaknesses with Judah right now, everything else, I mean, his defense is solid, his burst, his quickness, his handle is terrific. It's his outside shooting. He's not a great shooter. And when he gets into the lane, sometimes he's just a little too out of control. I think the biggest step for Judah will be when he gets into the lane is finding the guy that's flashing to the rim. Whether that be Jesse on a pick and roll, whether that be Benny cutting on the baseline. Just too many times last night, it was him trying to make, you know, a hero layup or a hero floater. If he is able to, you know, get to 3, 4, 5 assists per game, he had 4 on Monday, but only 1 last night. So if he's able to get those assist numbers up, then it's going to make things a lot easier. And when you get Jesse involved early, then he gets in a rhythm. The last few nights, we've seen him not get going until there's 5 minutes left in the game.
And Boeheim has certainly alluded to that as well, as much as the talking point about Bell and Benny in terms of getting involved on the glass, getting involved defensively and closing out on shooters. Another talking point for Coach Jim has been, look, we got to feed Jesse down low. We've got to make it a point to get him the ball down low and make sure that his spacing is where it needs to be, and really make it a point to work that ball to number 14 in the post. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. Judah on the night last night, 0 for 1 from 3. If he can develop any sort of an outside game, that's not to say it's not there, because we've seen it before, but if he can increase his shooting ability and, you know, score from all three levels and be that slasher, you know, obviously we know the mid-range game is there. And then in terms of extending it beyond the arc, that is really going to please NBA scouts. That's really going to please Jim Boeheim as well. From a St. John's standpoint, it's not a St. John's team that shot the lights out. I mean, you knew that's what it was going to be. Only 30% from downtown on 7 of 23. And you think about the way that Syracuse opened this game, right? St. John's really struggled to put the ball in the hoop. And we can sit here and play coulda, shoulda, woulda all day long. But I think it's a game that Orange fans wish they found a way to squeak out. And of course, Saimir Torrence with a chance to do that as regulation expires. That's something we can hit on here as well, Ethan. Coming out of that final play, that final timeout, 9 seconds to go. Jim Boeheim mentioned it in the press conference afterwards as well. He said, in a perfect world, look, Jesse Edwards is not bringing the ball over the timeline in the final play of regulation with 9 seconds to go. But Syracuse didn't really appear to have all too much drawn up. Boeheim saying the plan was to get the ball to Joe, which I have a little bit of an issue with in my own right with the off night that Joe had to begin with.
Yeah, Joe was awful. There's no sugarcoating it. When you're playing against athletes and a pressure defense like that, Joe is going to struggle. There were times in the second half where, you know, I was thinking, why is Joe in the game? And I don't see how that isn't warranted. You know, Saimir went in a couple times for him because you could tell by the end of the game that Judah was so worn down because he's dealing with 94 feet of heavy, you know, pressure on ball defense. And every single time he's having to work to get the ball up the court. And Joe's, he's just not athletic or fast enough to get around defenders like this. And St. John's is a very good team. They're a very athletic team. They're a very good defensive team. This is a, you know, top 30, top 40 KenPom defense. So that's when you know they're a good team. But Joe was just so much of a minus. Like, there were times where I was like, why is he in the game? And on that final possession, you know, Boeheim talked about it. We talked to Jesse in the locker room about it after the game. He was like, I shouldn't have picked up my dribble. I should have just kept going because I had scored on that move a couple possessions earlier. So, you know, he said he kept reliving that in his head after the game, which is understandable. And you love to see, you know, a senior taking accountability. I think that's what you want from your players. So I think it can be used as a learning experience, but I don't. Saimir shouldn't have taken that shot, obviously.
And all of this comes, of course, after the fact mentioned earlier, one night after setting a career high with 31 points, Girard just 1-for-10 from the floor against St. John's, 0-of-4 from downtown, and finishes with only 4 points on the night in 38 minutes. Syracuse oops, trying to get back in the win column, their next chance to do that this Saturday, back in the Dome, back in upstate New York against Bryant. But that's not the only team in action on the Hill. Syracuse football closing up shop in its regular season. And Ethan, does this Boston College game even mean anything at this point? 5 losses in a row for the Cuse. We know they're going bowling. Anything to be said for ending the regular season on the right note? Or at this point, is it just let's get to this bowl game and figure it out from there?
To be quite honest, I think it would be funny if they started 6-0 and then were 6-6. I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of people that share that opinion, but I think that would be just, I mean, that would just be the encapsulation of Dino Babers.
But you can't lose to Boston College.
No, you can't. Syracuse is we could talk a little picks a little bit later in the show if you would like, but the Orange currently 10.5-point favorites. That's a lot of points.
For a team that's lost 5 straight. Yeah. And really, you know, you don't want to call it a must win because at this point, this team not really playing for all that much anyway. But if you go out there and lay a dud against the Eagles, an Eagles team that has looked really bad at times throughout the year, then all sorts of interesting conversations to be had as this bowl game progresses. But for more on this regular season finale from Chestnut Hill coming up this Saturday against the Eagles, I had the chance to catch up with AJ Black of Locked On BC and a friend of the pod. We've had him on before. We had him back as well, breaking down the 2022 BC Eagles. Hope you enjoy. Moving right along here on the Ostrom Avenue podcast, Johnny Gadamowicz joined now by AJ Black, breaking down all things SU and BC ahead of the regular season finale this upcoming weekend. AJ, how's it going today? Thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to this being the last week of a frankly miserable football season for BC.
You've been on the podcast before. That means you qualify as a friend of the pod, and it's a pleasure to have you back. Let's hop right in here. I mean, the season as a whole for the Eagles is certainly an interesting one. You know, 2 ACC wins over Louisville and a then-ranked NC State squad, but yep, still just 3-8 and a step back following 500 a year ago. for SU fans that might be a little more unfamiliar with the Eagles, what would you sort of say has been some of the recurring themes as far as the struggles are concerned in 2022?
Yeah, absolutely. So the biggest issue has to be the offensive line, and it's really dictated everything that's gone on with BC this year. So SU would have seen last year five returning starters on BC's offensive line. Zion Johnson, who was with the Los Angeles Chargers, he's a first round draft pick. Alec Lindstrom, Ben Petrula, and Tyler Vrabel, Mike Vrabel's son, and Christian Mahogany. Now, four of those guys left. Christian Mahogany, who was all ACC, all American heading into the season, was going to be the rock to kind of be the bedrock of their new offensive line. Well, right after spring ball, he goes out and plays basketball and tears his knee up. He's gone for the year. So, okay, now they have no returning starters on the offensive line. They don't do anything in the transfer portal, which you can say what you will about how Halfley addressed that, but that's a little bit of Monday morning quarterbacking here. But they go in, they have a whole new offensive line. Within the first 2 weeks, two more guys go down for the rest of the year with various ailments. And then two more guys go down with injuries. So they're down, I mean, compared to last year, nine guys on their offensive line. And so it's been absolutely brutal at times to watch. They cannot run the ball at all. You'll watch the opposing defenses set the line of scrimmage every time that they run, and that's not good. And so they've become a one-dimensional offense. Again, they got lucky against NC State. They were able to run against Louisville. I don't know how the heck that happened. But other than that, it's been running uphill for this whole season.
Yeah, the most recent installment of that, a 44-0 loss to Notre Dame a week ago, where, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I saw most of that O-line, or what's left of it at least, missed with the flu.
The entire offensive line had the flu last week. So, yeah, it's when it rains, it pours for Boston College, and it's been raining for about 2 months now for the Eagles. Yeah, they were missing quite a few guys during practice. They came back, and against Notre Dame, it was ugly. 44-0, as you said. They let up 280 yards on the ground, which was obviously playing a team like Syracuse is going to be a major issue for them. And five turnovers. So they have a new quarterback in Emmett Moorhead at Boston College, who took over for Jakovic, who I doubt will play against Syracuse. He's got a litany of injuries. Emmett Moorhead was freshman of the week 2 weeks ago again for his performance against NC State, where he threw for three touchdowns, but had five turnovers against Notre Dame. And again, some of that was on him for making some very freshmanish passes, but also some of that was on the offensive line getting him killed. So, you know, I think you see the offensive line, the issues with that permeate into everything that BC does.
You mentioned how it's been a struggle on the ground all year, really. Through the air, I'm curious, what are some of the major differences as far as this offense is concerned when Jurkovic was on the field versus now the redshirt freshman in Moorhead?
Yeah, so Moorhead, I think, has a quicker timer in his head than Jurkovic did. Jurkovic, as you, if you remember watching the last couple of years, he played, I don't even think he played against Syracuse last year, so you saw him 2 years ago. You know, he tries to find the open guy, and he'll, you know, shred off guys and spin around, and ended up getting him injured a bunch of times. So when you have no offensive line, that kind of mentality is going to get you hurt, and that's what happened. Moorhead, I think, watched from the sideline, and I was impressed. He just gets the ball out fast. And when you have a really bad offensive line, that's probably the best that you can do. Now, Notre Dame was, I mean, partially probably because of the flu, partially because Notre Dame is better than BC. It didn't matter how fast he could get rid of it, because he just couldn't get rid of the ball fast enough, and he was getting hit. But, you know, in other games, when you watch the Duke game, when you watch the NC State game, he was able to get the offense going with that quick pass. And I think that's the big difference. And honestly, like I know Halfley will continually say at press conferences, he said it the last 2 weeks, there's a chance that Jurkovic will play for his own health. I hope he doesn't play. He has a concussion, a rib injury, the back of his ribs, and a knee injury right now. So it tells you how beat up the quarterbacks for BC are getting at this point.
It seems like Zay Flowers is by far the bright spot on this team, leading the conference in receiving yards. What makes him such a difference maker and so tough to stop for opposing defenses?
Yeah, so Zay, you know, I think he's going to be a real dream when it comes to the NFL draft, because scouts who watch him say that he's really dangerous at different levels. So he's got initial bursts that rival anyone in the country right now, where he can just get up and get by guys. But he can also, you can get him the ball quickly, and he can use his really strong ability to turn on the Jets, or his agility, which I think is very, very strong, to beat opposing cornerbacks. Now, I right now you look at him, he was just a Biletnikoff semifinalist named today. He probably won't. He's not going to win. It's one of the Ohio State guys will probably win. But I think when he gets to the combine, as Jeff Hafley was saying this last week, he's going to be a guy that I think scouts are going to fall in love with, because he's going to test off the charts. And I think he's going to interview really well too. I mean, even in the midst of the pot. So this is a guy that turned down six figures to go transfer somewhere else because he wanted to stay at Boston College. He does that, stays at BC. BC's having a miserable season. And what do you see 90% of the time is him still smiling on the sidelines. Like, he is a consummate professional. He's a consummate teammate. And I think that's going to really resonate at a position at the NFL that's usually filled with a lot of prima donnas and guys that think only about themselves. I think a lot of coaches are going to see him and go, wow, we want him on our team.
So that's the offense. I mean, as far as the defense is concerned, on the flip side, it seems like that's sort of always been Jeff Hafley's bread and butter on the defensive side of the ball.
Yep.
Yet they've allowed over 30 points six times this year. A unit that was third in the nation in pass defense a year ago and did have returners coming back. What would you sort of attribute some of that drop off to this season?
The BC fans that listen to my podcast hate me when I say this, but I attribute it to the offensive line. because here's the issue is that Boston College can't keep their offense on the field at all. So the defense has to stay out there and continue to hold the game together. And eventually they get worn down and then they let up points. If the offense could stay on the field, like they did against NC State, look, the defense let up 6 points over the last three quarters. They did their business. Now against Notre Dame, the offense was, it was three and out over and over again. And then the defense just fell apart. So I think fans are looking for what's gone on this season. And I was talking to my co-host on Locked On BC. We're texting back and forth. I said, how much do you think the issues on this offensive line, where you have two converted defensive linemen playing, you have a guy that has absolutely no business being out there. You'll watch him, number 67. I hate blasting the kid, but he's had a tough year. And you have a redshirt freshman. How much of that do you attribute to what's going on with the 3-8 season? And he said over 70%. That's your answer for everything at this point, because, you know, football is like a fine-tuned machine. If one cog goes out, everything falls apart. So there's been other issues that have been going, been going on with the Eagles, but I honestly think the talent is there. The offensive line has just not helped keep this offense going enough so the defense can do their job.
When these two teams met last year, and of course, preface all of this by saying it was last year, a full year ago at this point, SU held BC to just 6 points, a game where Emmett Moorhead did see some action in for the Eagles as far as they're concerned. How much, if at all, can you take away from when these two teams met last year from a BC standpoint and apply it to this regular season finale coming up?
Great point. So defensively, I think there's a lot to be worried about if you're a BC fan, because obviously the Orange have Sean Tucker and Schrader can if he's, I assume he's playing, right? I haven't been looking at the film lately. you know, you get those two guys, you have a mobile quarterback and a running back that can change the game. Given BC's issues with their offense, which they had last year, I feel like it could mirror a lot of what BC saw last year, where if the offense can't stay on the field and Syracuse's issue is the run defense, which if BC goes out there and tries to run the ball, Syracuse is going to blow them out of the water. I think there's a lot of the similar issues, and I think Emmett Moorhead's going to look completely different because he looked like a deer in headlights last year against Syracuse because he hadn't played in collegiate football at that point. He looks a lot more confident now, but everything else around him, I think I could see a lot of mirroring from last year to this year.
Is there a sense on campus right now in Chestnut Hill? I mean, you look at the way that this season has gone for the Cuse so far. You start out 6-0, you drop 5 straight. Is there a level of optimism in that, okay, we're getting Dino Babers and the Orange sort of at the right time while they're down? Or are the issues much more focused and the attention much more in-house and reflecting on, you know, the problems that the Eagles themselves need to resolve?
So I think the team itself, I feel like they still have been locked in. You haven't seen players opting out to go transfer yet. So I think Halfley, to his credit, has done a decent job with that. I think the flu game against Notre Dame last week, folks don't want to hear it, but that illness definitely played a big part of that. The fans themselves, I think a lot of the fans are done with the season. And I think the fans have been done with the season for about 4 weeks. So there's probably got, and the fact that this is a night game in late November, I expect in Thanksgiving weekend, so many of the students won't be there. I think it's going to be a lightly attended game because the season's already a wash. It's going to be really cold. And I think fans are just waiting for the season to end. I think they're waiting to see what Halfley does to fix this mess, because they want answers and they deserve it, because the expectations are kind of flip flop. Like, you know, Syracuse is going to a bowl. BC should have been doing that. They shouldn't have been losing to UConn and Rutgers. And here we are in the end of the season talking about those losses. And I think the fans are just done. They're just done. And they don't want to watch BC get crushed anymore.
Zooming out a little bit and taking a little bit more of a big picture view in the sense of this game. I mean, obviously SU and BC by far from football powerhouses, but you think about, you know, Power 5 Northeast programs, you know, two of the first names that probably do come to mind. Anything up for grabs this weekend as far as the recruiting arms race is concerned in your mind, or is that not really something that is on people's radars at this point?
I mean, I think for me, writing for 247, I know that this is going to be a big game in terms of that. BC can, if Jeff Halfley could end the season saying that they won 2 out of 3 against teams with winning records, that's a positive for them, and they need any positive they can to spin to recruits at this point, because BC has lost 2 in the last month, and we're approaching National Signing Day, and you know you're gonna want to make sure that the guys that you have, which I know they're excited for a lot of those guys, stick with you. But if you're going into the offseason down 3, you know, with a 3-9 season, That's tough to spin to recruits. That's not, you know, a lot of the promises of like the program going in the right direction and you can be part of something special. That's a lot harder to sell to kids when you have a season like that, because all it takes is one opposing coach to go, you really want to play those guys? You see what happened to them last year? And that can torpedo a recruiting pitch. So I think for Boston College, yeah, it only makes it a 4-8 year. But as I said, you could say you won 2-3 games in the ACC. That's, I think, pretty close to what they had last year. They could say, you know, that we beat our Northeast rival, we beat Louisville, we beat a ranked team. There's some nuggets you can take out of that. So as much as the fans up here are tuned out, I think the players and the staff really, really want this win.
And bringing the focus back to this weekend, I mean, from seeing early indications right now, line suggesting Syracuse -10.5. Yep. Your thoughts on that?
It all depends on the health of, you know, I think of the offensive line. If it's now a week away from whatever this flu outbreak was. Basketball, they lost to Tarleton State last night because, you know, one of their players had the flu again. So, man, they need to get their flu boosters. But I'm thinking, if BC really cannot throw the football, and I know Syracuse is a very good passing defense, and I know they're missing, you know, their Garrett Williams, but I'm looking at this game and I'm saying this is a bad matchup. I think Syracuse probably wins 14 points.
All right. Well, there you have it, AJ. think that's all I've got for you. Thanks so much for coming on today. Really appreciate it. That's AJ Black of BC Eagle Insider, part of the 247 Sports Network, and the host of Locked On Boston College. AJ, thanks again for coming on today.
All right. Thanks for having me on, John.
All right. Take it easy. AJ, thanks so much for coming on. As always, getting us up to speed on a really interesting Boston College squad. And maybe the biggest question surrounding this game for the Eagles is who's going to start at quarterback. Will we see a return of Phil Jurkovec with not much up for grabs, or will it continue to be Emmett Moorhead, the redshirt freshman? Either way, Syracuse really needs a win in the worst way, gain some momentum ahead of this bowl game, which of course still no one knows what the bowl game will be or who the opponent is. All sorts of projections starting to trickle in over these past few weeks. But Ethan, maybe for our purposes, the most important thing that this Boston College game has to offer is how it might impact our Ostrom pick standings, because after another solid week for you, somehow, some way, you still haven't put me to bed yet mathematically. So we've got to keep a very close eye on the line and on the over-under for the Eagles this weekend.
Yes, we've done the math. I'm not a math minor. I'm not a math major, but I can do some simple addition and probability. And we have found out that I'm currently 25-8 and you're 16-11. But if I were to go 0-6 and you were to go 6-0 over these last two games, you would pass me. So mathematically, Johnny is still alive. We've got right now a 10.5 point spread in favor of Syracuse and an over under of 47 in this game. I was all over the under in the weight game because, I mean, this is an offense we saw that scored 12 points over the previous 2 weeks, and then they go out and score 35. And we know Wake can score. So that didn't go well, but thank you very much to Andre Schmidt for missing that field goal. Oh, I was sitting in WER and fell out of my chair when he missed that because of excitement.
I bet you did. I bet you did. So now I'm relying on the Boston College Eagles, whatever it might be. We'll make our picks, of course, a little bit later in the week. I'm curious to see how that line moves, if at all. BC coming off a 44-0 shellacking at the hands of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, a Notre Dame team. Crazy to think about how their season has turned around over the past month or so as well. We'll switch over back to hoops for a bit here now to wrap things up, because Ethan, to be quite frank, not a whole lot to break down as far as this football team is concerned that we haven't already hit on throughout the course of the year. All you need to know is 6-0, 0-5 since then, and now trying to salvage a win and go 7-5 to wrap up the regular season. As far as the basketball is concerned, though, Ethan, these next few weeks going to be very interesting. You've got, let's call it a little bit of a tune-up, get right game against Bryant. Maybe not to the same extent that Northeastern was following that loss to Colgate, but still a game that if you're Syracuse, make no mistake, you want to go out there and you want to be down on the Bulldogs before two really intriguing and really challenging road trips coming up next week at Illinois and then an ACC opener at Notre Dame. But of course, the first task, Bryant, and a game that you can't really overlook after all, Doug Eddard, the March Madness phenom, taking his talents to Bryant. So that will certainly be interesting to watch on Saturday afternoon. But Ethan, as far as this Bryant game is concerned, anything specific you're keying in on Syracuse-wise as far as what you want to see to get back in the win column, or is it just go out there and get a win however you can?
It's the rotation to me, because if this isn't a win, then there's a major problem. Bryant's, you know, over 170th on KenPom. Syracuse is at 61st at the moment. I want to mention that the Orange defense, much maligned over the past couple of seasons, moved up almost 10 spots in KenPom's defensive efficiency after last night. So maybe the zone is turning a corner, because, you know, Mintz is playing very well. The centers are playing terrific in the back end, like we talked about at the beginning of the pod. But this should be a win. I mean, you're over 100 spots higher than them on KenPom, so I'm not going to predict anything but a win. But what I'm interested in is the rotations, because you look at Monday night, and on Monday, Jim Boeheim in the first half, Justin Taylor plays, Malik Brown plays, and then on Tuesday night, Quadir Copeland plays, and neither Brown or Taylor plays. So I don't know whether it's, you know, he's throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks, or there's actually a method to his madness. But I'm interested to see who plays in this game and for what minutes, because, you know, Chris Bell's in the starting lineup. The first three games of the season, he was, you know, getting very quick hooks and then got an extended leash over the last few nights once his shots started to fall. So maybe if Bell's not shooting well, he gets hooked, but I wouldn't take him out. I mean, you're not taking Benny out. Benny's been playing very well on both ends of the floor, except for a couple minor lapses. And obviously you have the guards in there as well who are dynamic. So I don't really know where the minutes are at the moment. Obviously you don't want Benny playing 45 minutes every night. I would, you know, probably spell him with Malik Brown for a little bit if you can, because they're, you know, similar body type. Brown's that physical inside presence. The problem is you don't want Benny and Brown in the game at the same time, because then your lack of shooting is just so prominent, and then teams can just, you know, clog the paint against you and not have to cover, you know, different guys on the outside. So I'm interested to see what Boeheim's rotations are like and how he distributes minutes in a game that's probably, you would think, you know, not be very close in the second half and who gets some run.
Yeah, I'll piggyback off of that. I'm interested to see how much this team wants to go small ball. You know, last night, not really for extended stretches so much, but last night there were times when we saw the three guard lineup out there.
The problem with that is that it's hard to play the three guard lineup when your tallest guard is 6'3" and you're playing zone.
Correct. And especially on a night like last night where Joe doesn't have much going offensively anyway, if you want to go out there and give Saimir some run and let JG3 kind of catch his breath and figure things out mentally, whatever it is on the bench, then that's something that obviously Coach Boeheim shouldn't be opposed to. But I'm curious to see, you know, is that something that we should expect to see more, or was it just a little bit of a flash in the pan, kind of dealing with the circumstances as far as the St. John's game was concerned with any sort of foul trouble or what have you? Because, you know, I've been impressed with Saimir. I mean, I know he's not, you know, he's no one that
I haven't
going to write home about.
I haven't, to be honest. I thought last year you could see he had it. Like he's a good ball handler. He's right. A good passer. He's a good defender, but he's good at getting around defenders. He just can't finish at all. Yeah. Like I thought that he would take the step to where he could start finishing at the rim and finding, you know, Jesse down low. And we just haven't seen that. There were multiple times last night where he had opportunities to finish at the rim or find the big that was open because of weak side help and didn't. So that disappointed me a little bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, he goes scoreless in both games with 23 total minutes. I should preface what I said by saying, impressed with him, not in the sense of scoring the basketball, but in the sense that, okay, he can eat up some minutes off the bench. He might not be the best floor general out there, but at least when the basketball is in his hands, there's a sense of calmness. There's a sense of control that he can at least provide off the bench and give you those minutes when you need to give a guy like Gerard or Judah a little bit of a breather.
Right. I guess the thing is, like, if he's playing, so he's usually coming in for Joe and he's right. Giving Joe a breather. If you're going to have the ball in your hands that much when you're in the game, I need more than two assists in 23 total minutes over two nights. I just need more.
Yeah. I hear you.
And part of that is the people you're passing to making shots, which you can't control when you make the pass, but two assists in 23 minutes is not going to cut it.
Right. Torrence, Gerard, the rest of the Orange trying to get back on track this weekend, coming up against Bryant. First of all, happy Thanksgiving from all of us at the Ostrom Avenue podcast and WAER Sports. Hope you enjoy some turkey. Hope you enjoy some football, whatever your Thanksgiving traditions may be. Enjoy a couple of days off. WAER Sports will be right back at it coming up this Saturday. Another doubleheader, another busy day on the original home of the Orange. It all gets going against Bryant for men's basketball, a 4 p.m. tip. McClurg team countdown to tip-off has you at 3:30. And then Dino Babers' crew trying to salvage one last regular season win, a 7:30 kick between SU and BC from Massachusetts Alumni Stadium. McClurg team countdown to kickoff gets going at 7 p.m. on Saturday. That'll do it for this edition of the Ostrom Avenue podcast. You can find us wherever you get your podcast. Be sure to leave a like, give us a subscribe, what have you. We certainly would appreciate it. With Ethan Frank, I'm Johnny Gadamowicz saying so long, happy Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you next week.